are listening to The Recovered Therapist, brought to you by FreshOutOfPlans.com. I'm Jeannie Griffin, and I'll be your host. Instead of focusing on labels, diagnoses, and psychobabble, we keep things honest, simple, and hopeful so that you can grow personally and spiritually. Thank you for joining me. What is the Enneagram? E-N-N-E-A-G-R-A-M. E-N-N-E-A-G-R-A-M. Well, the Enneagram used to be shrouded in mystery, but now you can find 5,000 million things on it. And please don't go start taking assessments and reading about it, because you'll get so mixed up, you'll have no idea what you're talking about. It needs to be done very simply and methodically. Then once you learn about it, you can go and explore all this other stuff. If you're interested in studying the Enneagram in a course with me, send me an email at info@freshoutofplans.com. Remember, FreshOutOfPlans.com, FreshOutOfPlans.com. And then I'll see who's interested, and we may be able to get a Zoom class going, or if you're in Los Angeles, we'll get something in person going. So what is it? Well, it was a journey in self-exploration and your personality. It began about, they think, in Afghanistan about 2,000 years ago, and perhaps the early years of the Christian influence in Persia. It seemed to infiltrate Muslim circles and move into Asia and Africa and the subcontinent of India. Until the present century, it was simply an oral tradition. Nothing was ever written down. It was passed down through generation, and only the Sufi masters understood it and would talk to you personally about what number they thought you were. You didn't learn about all the other personalities on here. Then eventually, Oscar Ichazo was the first person in Chile to learn about it, and then in the United States. And he grew up in Bolivia and Peru, was taught this Sufi tradition in La Paz. Some years later, he was discovered, or his teachings were the attention of some of the Esalen Institute in Big Sur, California. And eventually, he lectured in Santiago, Chile, and among those people from Esalen in California, named Claudio Naranjo, passed it on to some of the Jesuits. And eventually, the Jesuits, especially the circles in Chicago area and in Cleveland area, began studying it and having workshops, at one point had a retreat house in Cleveland, Ohio. When they began writing about this and putting it down, because they were still within the spiritual community, it didn't lose its spiritual essence, which is the main essence, was an explanation of how personalities evolved and the necessity or the need for a spiritual quest. Eventually, it got into the United States, and of course, the psychologists got all involved and squished all the spirituality out of it, and it's become kind of a mess. But eventually, then, there are some authors where you can study it from both a psychological point of view and a spiritual point of view. And so that's why I urge you not to just jump off the cliff and do this on your own. So basically, although it appears to be kind of a negative way to start, the way you begin to identify which of these nine personalities you possess, it starts with discovering your compulsion or your negativity. And if you think of the word as compulsion, it's not just an obsession. It is sometimes a very unconscious way of protecting yourself. You know, I always say that everything we do is to make ourselves safe. And it is. So when you identify the compulsions, then what ends up happening, you don't see this as a negativity. You see this compulsion as one's personality using a basic defense strategy a person has developed for a meaningful existence and for security. This defense strategy has been so carefully hidden that probably is not really open or discovered by the person who has it. But to discover that it is truly a problem rather than a protection, when you discover that, it provides an incredible avenue for growth. When you study the Enneagram, you will result in this new freedom. And you'll decide then, do I want to continue with my compulsion and the way I've been doing business all this life? Or do I want to reach for this other path that's not so easy? So think in terms of this compulsion serves to protect yourself, okay? And to seek and unveil it is you kind of have to die to it. When you go along that line of I'm going to protect myself and continue with this compulsion, the personality has simply chosen a way to achieve that through its own efforts. In other words, the strategy becomes a chosen way of self-salvation, cutting out God, cutting out any concept of a higher power. So when I follow that compulsion, yeah, I can make myself safe, but then I'm the one having to do it all. I don't surrender to this second path of spirituality because I can't be positive of what is there. And so that's what makes this an incredible study. And you reach for the spiritual path. The power is one's life that, you know, right there standing at the turning point. Do I continue with this compulsivity? Or do I recognize that it has protected me up to now, but it is also a problem, and that I'm not the source of my salvation? I will undertake this journey, and it opens me to new horizons, and I'll be better for it. But you have to make that decision. So there are 9 personality types. And the theory behind this is that the one God came down to earth and dispensed 9 aspects of its personality. And so there are 9 aspects. And each one of these 9 has, like I said, a compulsion. So if you're a number 1, what you try to avoid or you're conflicted about is anger. Ones try to avoid anger. 2 recognizes that they have needs, but they readily see their needs in others instead of themselves, so they put other people ahead of themselves. 3s avoid failure. Okay, so sometimes it drives them to always be working for success. 4s avoid ordinariness. They don't want to be ordinary. They want to be special. 5s avoid emptiness. So they're constantly pursuing knowledge. They want more and more knowledge. 6s avoid deviance. They see life as governed by laws and rules and norms, and out of responsibility to those demands, they are preoccupied with regulations and they're very, very loyal. 7s avoid pain. They're optimistic and fun-loving, but they avoid noticing pain and distress in the lives of others and themselves. They often fail to carry out what they plan to do because of the difficulties, and they just don't like discomfort. 8s avoid weakness. Their glory is being strong people. They perceive life as a struggle for what is right. And the fact that the world is not that way should be means that they have to keep their personal dignity and they will fight for injustices. 9s avoid conflict. They feel uncomfortable with any kind of tension, lack of harmony, and to them, nothing is more important as peace. They're the peace at any price people. Okay. Now, we can look at these, that's brief and it doesn't do them a lot of justice. But when you study the Enneagram and you look at how these each one of these numbers or personality types try to avoid things. In avoiding those compulsions, they think they will make themselves safe, and as a result, they have taken care of themselves and they will seek this salvation. Okay. And they're responsible for it. Now, there's a lot more to this. So if you hear anybody talking about, well, yeah, I'm a number one with a two wing, ignore the wings, ignore the triads of heart, head, and head and all that at the beginning. Just say, okay, I'll learn about that later. So this theory that the one God walked around and dispensed nine aspects of his personality shows you how you avoid these different compulsions. So when you see the Enneagram circle, there are arrows on it. And they got to be real careful with the arrows too, because some of the drawings make the arrows not make sense. So you have a choice at some point when you learn, oh, I'm a number one, or I'm a number four, or this is what gets in my way, and this is what causes me problems, but it's what I feel safe with. You have a choice. You can either move around the circle toward integration, or you can move around the circle to disintegration. Now, each number, let's say I'm a number one, and where I'm supposed to go for growth would be a number four. But what I do instead is I move to a number seven. Now, I know that doesn't mean anything to you right now, but if I go with the arrow toward a number four, it's easier because it's familiar to me. But what I do is I move to the negative aspects of that number four, which means as a number one, I would move back toward the negative aspects and become depressed. Now, if I move toward the seven, which means I would go against the arrow, that's my redemption. That's where I need to be going. But the whole purpose of this arrow thing in the circle is that if we go toward what is familiar, that's when we're choosing our compulsion and things get worse and worse and worse about our growth. If we go against the arrow, then it's harder. Just think about it as going against the wind or going against the tide. If you're going against something, it's harder. Going upstream is harder because the stream's all going downstream. You're going against the stream. When you do that, you need help. And so it will make you call out to help friends and help from a higher power. And when you do that, you overcome the negativity and you move toward growth and much more spiritually connected. And I know that probably is totally confusing to you. So let me give you one little more tidbit here about these types. And like I said, the psychologists have gotten all involved in this. And now you can see if I'm a number one, what type, what kind of animal am I? What kind of color am I? It goes on and on. And I don't know that the Sufis cared about that. But the Achilles heel, let's say, in a number one, the traps that you can fall into as a number one, you can fall in trying to be perfect. And the trap for number two, you care about other people and you do things for other people, but your trap could be you get into too much service. And number three, the trap that can get you because you want to be a success is trying to make everything efficient and businesslike. Everything seems to be a transaction. It's just all business. Number four, the trap you can fall into is never thinking you're authentic enough. And five, the trap you can fall into is their knowledge. You cannot get enough knowledge. So a lot of times you'll be research, and never get a project off the ground. Number six, you're loyal. You don't like any kind of deviance. So security becomes your trap. You will, unless you have security, you're not going to move. And we know how successful that can be. Number seven, your trap in your wanting to have everything, experience everything nicely, is your trap can be fantasy and idealism. One of the things sevens can fall into is fantasy land and addictions too. Everybody on the scale can fall into that. Eight, you want to be strong and you don't like the people hurting the underdog. So your trap could be you decide you are, you know, the man or the woman who is going to make sure that there's justice for everybody. And you can believe your own press and get into trouble there. You need to help people find a God, not be their God. And number nines, you don't like any kind of nonconformity. You like peace at any price. So much of the time, you are always finding something wrong with yourself. So you self-criticize. That's, I think, enough for right now. And the book I started with is an early book, and it's just called The Enneagram. And the authors are Maria Beesing, B-E-E-S-I-N-G, Robert Nosek, N-O-G-O-S-E-C, excuse me, S-E-K, and Patrick O'Leary. Now, these were the Jesuits and the nuns. So this has a real spiritual and a Christian basis to it. There are other authors that are good. David Daniels is one. Helen Palmer is very good, but she practices in the oral tradition, and I found her book very confusing to start. It's huge. I needed something simple and then go to something more complex. Other books by Dan Rizzo, good, very good, and Richard Rohr, R-O-H-R. But if you'd like to study more and learn about it and figure out what your type is, we will. I love to teach this, and from time to time, people are always asking me to do so. So let me know if you're interested.
Thank you for listening to The Recovered Therapist, where we keep topics honest, simple, and hopeful. I love you. There's not a damn thing you can do about it. Until next time.